Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. I've already been receiving a text message from my friends. Don't sing anymore on air, please. Okay. I promise you I won't. But it's hard to do with some of those songs as we play some of homage to Glenn Frey here and the Eagles. And as Dave and I have been talking about the old men that we are, that's kind of the music we grew up with.
It brings back memories of our youth.
Our youth. Thank you so much.
It does.
Well,
and you can sing. I mean, we all sing along, good or bad, with those songs.
Well, and Bob Ferguson suggested, he goes, I can picture you back in the day growing up out in Villa Park with your Walkman on. And I said, they didn't have Walkman then.
No, you didn't. Absolutely not. You were lucky to have a pair of nice, great big headphones in your room at home.
To plug into your quadraphonic.
Your quadraphonic.
Eight-track player.
Eight-track player, yeah.
Yeah.
The lightweight stuff, portable gear, didn't even think about it.
Well, and what, the first Walkman was, that was a cassette.
It was a cassette, yeah, right. That was out in the late 70s before CDs came out in around 83 or so, yeah.
As we provide some education for the younger listeners out there, as we were talking about vinyl and records earlier, too, off air.
Yes, the 45 RPMs, we have educated the younger crowd as to what that was about
and how,
how much fun it was.
And how you played them.
And how you, right.
Oh, well, we'll be playing a couple of more of Glenn Frey.
We'll have a guest in one day to talk about the 78 RPM era as we go back further in time.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks for taking me even further back and reminding me of my old age.
Even before we were around.
Indeed. Indeed. Let's make that point perfectly clear. Well, we are playing some of the ads that people are hearing in Iowa as we get closer to caucus day on February 1st. And on the Republican side, the race over in Iowa seems to be coming down to Donald Trump and Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Cruz, also not a beloved figure among the Republican establishment, and Trump has been attacking Cruz, and now Cruz's super PAC is hitting back at Donald Trump. And to do that, they're using an introduction that Trump gave of Cruz at a political dinner in February 2014.
Now, one of the reasons that I like Ted Cruz so much is that he's not controversial. But the truth is, he shouldn't be controversial because what he's doing is right. He took a stand recently, and it was a brave stand. And had he really had a little backing, it might not have ended Obamacare, but you would have really gotten a big chunk out of it. And I just watched him. I watched what he was saying, and I listened very carefully. And I don't understand the controversy. It's common sense. It's good government. It's so many good things. But he really is a special guy. He's now a very, very popular and important figure in all of our lives. So with that, I would like to introduce a very special guy, Senator Ted Cruz.
So that's the Ted Cruz super PAC ad to combat Donald Trump. Trump is going after the evangelical Republicans, as is Ted Cruz, and they're a big part of the GOP base in Iowa. For Trump, he's using a radio ad featuring the son of the late Reverend Jerry Falwell from Liberty University in a testimonial.
I'm Donald Trump, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Jerry Falwell Jr., president of Liberty University, talks about Donald Trump.
I see a lot of parallels between my father and Donald Trump. Like Mr. Trump, Dad would speak his mind. He would make statements that were politically incorrect. He speaks the truth publicly, even if it is uncomfortable for people to hear. Dad explained that when he walked into the voting booth, he wasn't electing a Sunday school teacher or a pastor or even a president who shared his theological beliefs. He was electing the president of the United States to lead a nation. Matthew 7:16 tells us that by their fruits ye shall know them. Donald Trump's life has borne fruit, fruit that has provided jobs to multitudes of people. I've seen firsthand that his staff loves him and is loyal to him because of his servant leadership. In my opinion, Donald Trump lives a life of loving and helping others, as Jesus taught in the Great Commandment.
Yes, that would be Jerry Falwell Jr., endorsing Donald Trump's candidacy for president of the United States. Well, now we're going to switch topics. And for the next hour, and I encourage you to phone in at 312-981-7200, we're going to talk about the issues affecting the Chicago Police Department, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, the whole idea of where policing is these days, the Department of Justice investigation. And to do so, I've got two of my great Tribune colleagues here in studio, in the Allstate Showcase studio. I've got John Chase and Dave Heinzman. Gentlemen, welcome, and have some of the coffee cake I brought in for you to help entice you to get up this early in the morning.
Chase is already into the coffee cake. Good morning.
Nice of you to rat him out.
Thanks for having us. Yeah. It was good.
Well, John, recently you were one of the co-authors of this very large story, but important story, basically taking a look at emails, meeting notes, those kinds of things. I can't say we answer the question, but certainly raise the question of, given Mayor Emanuel's statements regarding the Laquan McDonald shooting, what did he know? When did he know it?
Right.
You walk us through what, I mean?
Sure.
Because it is a very interesting timeline.
Yeah, I won't read the whole story. So.
No, because we have to be off at 9 o'clock.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Right. You only have an hour. We did take a look at that's been a question since this video was released and the questions start coming up of Mayor Emanuel and is what his involvement was in all of this, because the shooting, as probably people remember, happened in October 2014. And people and other media have been looking at things. There have been emails sort of dripping out a little bit here and there, and questions have been asked of the mayor. And so what we did was try to take as comprehensive a look as we could at this point in time.
And looking at the emails and meeting records against his statements.
Right. And so looking at what he said and then taking the emails that we received, his calendar, and sort of looking at all that. And, you know, what we found was the mayor had said that he didn't really know the severity, the gravity of the McDonald shooting until about March of 2015, several months after the shooting. He didn't know that the police reports of those of that shooting sort of conflicted with what the video showed until just last month in December, when everybody found out when those police
that
reports,
was the public release
when
of
the
those police
reports,
reports
were released, exactly, and we all read stories. And you know what we found was the top staffers became keenly aware of the McDonald's shooting. Within 2 months of the shooting, which is 3 months before the mayor had said he became aware of it, and McDonald's family's lawyers had notified his law department, the mayor's law department, in March of 2015, which is about 8 months before the mayor said he was aware of all this. The lawyers for the McDonald family had said, hey, you know, we've looked at the police reports, we've seen the video, and there's serious questions here. And in between that whole time, there were literally dozens of meetings with the people who were involved with these email discussions and the mayor. Now, we're not there on the wall for those meetings, but as you said, so that's why we can't 100% answer that question of exactly what did he know and when did he know it. But it certainly raises serious questions about what the mayor is having these conversations. He's having dozens of conversations with these same people who are intimately involved with the situation as it happening behind the scenes. And he's, saying that he didn't, know anything about it until much later.
And some of these meetings, these dozens of meetings, but some of them involving Steve Patton, the top attorney for the administration,
right,
involved the issue of police-involved shootings.
Yeah. I mean, there's one day where Steve Patton, the corporation counsel for the city, is March 16th, and it's about a month before the city council approved the $5 million settlement with the McDonald family. He goes from calling Zach Farden on his
the U.S. attorney,
who is heavily involved with the McDonald case, to then having a police, a quote-unquote police-involved shooting meeting with a number of people, including a staffer for Emanuel, and then going into a meeting with the attorneys for McDonald's family. Literally all, you know, boom, 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 one after the other. And then there's meetings in between all of those with the mayor himself. So, again, it just raises a lot of red flags. You know, the mayor's office has basically said, well, these are all part of his normal meetings, and that's all they said, which is not really a direct answer to the
correct. They did not provide a direct answer.
It's also important to remember that the city fights a lot of police shooting lawsuits, and this one was settled without a lawsuit being filed. So the city and the mayor's office and the law department made a decision to settle this case for $5 million without a lawsuit ever being filed. And the reason they did that was because of the facts of the case, which was what John was alluding to, is that early on, the people around Rahm knew what the facts of the case were, and that in specifically was there was this video, what was on the video, and then what was in the police reports. And that, as it's played out, has been the crux of this case, is that the two don't match up at all. And so that was the issue early on. And so the thing that he's saying he didn't know about was the whole reason that this case got settled for $5 million without a lawsuit ever being filed.
Which goes to the issue of what he talks about. He didn't realize the gravity of the situation.
Correct.
Right.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Oh, but she can't take you anyway. You don't already know how to go. And I got a peaceful, easy feeling. And I know you won't let me down.
The Eagles with Glenn Frey with the lead vocals. That's from a live BBC appearance, 1973.
Wow.
So joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio, my Tribune colleagues, Dave Heinzman and John Chase. And we're talking, I kind of was joking that this is a acronym show today when we had Representative Rob Martwick on. We were talking about CPS, and now we're talking about CPD, Chicago Police Department. And some of the issues involving where we stand right now, and David, you know, you've been dealing with CPD for a long time, and I kind of wonder, you had even before the Laquan McDonald video, and you had the national issue of policing and community trust and everything, and there was an incident where Mayor Emanuel kind of said that he thought this focus nationally was had placed the Chicago police in like a fetal position.
Mm-hmm, right.
And this was before all of this. And I'm kind of curious, is how do you see the average police officer reacting to what is going on as we speak today?
It's varied, and it's, you know, the police department's very big. It's 10,000, give or take, police officers. So it's hard to make a sweeping generalization about how they feel about this. But there's no doubt that there is a longstanding feeling of us against them in the police department, and that they are a besieged, you know, nobody understands what they do. Everybody is quick to judge harshly how they act when they're on the street. And that's gotten much worse, you know, with this focus of the last few months. And so, you know, there have been issues.
There's certainly, but that attitude, there was always been somewhat of that.
It's always there.
But now it's in a heightened
right.
kind of state.
So, you know, three conversations with three different detectives have I had in the last couple of weeks. One says it's never been worse. He's sick of it. He wants out of the city. One says, basically, it stinks, but I've seen this before. And it's a lot like everything we've seen for years. And then another guy who's working on a really complicated murder doesn't talk about it at all. He's completely consumed with the work. And so it's, you know, but it is bad. And so, you know, what they're facing now, and it does get in the way of doing police work.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you, is that, you know, is it an inhibiting factor or in doing policing?
It can be. And so one of the things that, so the guy who says it's never been worse and I want out of here, what they're saying is, you know, the other thing they're saying is we're just doing the minimum. You know, we're not
going through the motions.
Basically, screw it. We're not. Yeah, we're going through the motions and we're not going to do. And so there is an element out there that does that. I think it's a minority. I think most of them are doing their jobs and, you know, they're police officers for a reason. It's because this is what they want to do. But yeah, it does get.
But they don't want to be in a flashpoint of controversy.
They do not. Yes. And so there is definitely a feeling of every little thing we do now instead of. I mean, in the past, and I've written about this before, you know, there was a problem in that when police officers screwed up, there was a movement quickly to cover for them, to make sure reports got written in a certain way. And they had a feeling of confidence that if they did make a mistake on the street, it wasn't going to crush them. And now a lot of them don't feel that way. They feel like if they do make a mistake, even if it's an honest mistake, they're going to get blasted for it.
And nobody's got their backs.
And nobody's got their backs, exactly.
We're speaking with David Heinzman and John Chase, my colleagues at the Chicago Tribune. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Coming up on the Sunday Spin, we'll continue our discussion about the Chicago Police Department and Mayor Rahm Emanuel with my Tribune colleagues, John Chase and Dave Heinzman.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. And joining me here in studio this morning, my good friends and Tribune colleagues, John Chase and Dave Heinzman. We're talking about the issues involving the problems with the Chicago Police Department, the issues involving Mayor Rahm Emanuel's leadership, and where we go next. And on that issue of where we go next, we've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, Rick, to your guests. I want to ask the question with the naming of a new superintendent. With a lot of the tension that's going on, you know, how difficult it would be for outsiders to come in, and then also the whole you know, racial factor as far as naming a minority candidate. So thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ron. Dave?
So, yeah, that, you know, right now we have an interim superintendent in John Escalante, and Rahm, one of the first things he did to try to manage the situation was to dismiss Gary McCarthy.
After previously expressing support for Gary McCarthy.
And so now there's a search for a new superintendent, and it's a complicated thing because this Justice Department investigation has also begun. So whoever gets the job is likely within a year or so to be managing a consent decree, which is a agreement with the Justice Department about making reforms at the Chicago Police Department, and that invites a lot of scrutiny and benchmarks that have to be hit over the next several years. So it's going to be a very complicated job. It's a question of who would want it, and I think they have a lot of candidates who do want it. And whether or not, so Rahm and his first superintendent obviously went outside and got Gary McCarthy, who had a long history at the New York Police Department and then the Newark, New Jersey Police Department. So he may go outside again, and it may be difficult to go in, to stay inside. A lot of the top command staff over the last few years, because of problems in the police department, have gotten out, either taken retirements or moved on to other jobs outside of the police department. So there's been a little bit of a, you know, reduction of the top talent coming up in the upper ranks of the police department. So,
plus the issue too, as the mayor has said, where he believes that code of silence exists that has led to cover-ups. Mm-hmm. That if you pick somebody from inside the department, where that culture, as the mayor contends, is institutionalized to some degree, that also raises questions.
Right, and we've
been
here before. I mean, back in 2006 and 2007, the police department was beset by really big scandals, the special operations scandal, and then people will remember the Tony Abadi bar beating video, the giant cop pummeling this little bartender that was caught on video, and the cover-up that followed that. And at the time, Daley fired Phil Klein, who was a police department insider, a cop's cop, but had all of these cover-up scandals under his watch. And Daley went outside and eventually hired Jody Weiss, who was a former FBI official who came in as a reformer and shook the department up, and a lot of the rank and file didn't like him very much. But so we've been through these cycles before where there's been big scandals in the police department, and they go outside and they bring in somebody, a fresh face from not, you know, tarnished by the bad things in the Chicago Police Department to do reform. And so we may be headed that way again. It's a different circumstance because there is this Justice
Department. Well, and you kind of raised this issue, and I've thought the same thing, is that there does seem to be this kind of cyclical nature that
very
goes
much so,
on. But,
yeah.
But is something different this time around because of perhaps we have the higher incidence of gun violence already this year? You have the national issue of policing and community relations as a kind of now a political topic.
It's a very dicey job to take. First of all, because of the Justice Department investigation, is that whoever comes in is going to have this federal oversight.
Anybody can go in and file a complaint that they're not meeting the consent decree.
Yeah, it's yes, and so that's very different. And now also, you hate to judge a year by the first month statistics, but so far in January, shootings and homicides are up a lot over last year. And so, you know, the rate of violence has been kind of up and down and flat.
I'm not trying to say there's a correlation
right
between that and policing at all. I don't mean to say no. That, but that is also, you know, the black mark on this city nationally is the incidence of gun violence.
Right. And right now is a very precarious moment, it feels like, for this police department and this city with regard to this stuff. Because violence is up. There is this issue of morale and the police on their heels, and there is federal oversight, and Rahm is in a very weakened position right now to deal with all this stuff with a firm hand, and so it's just a, you know, it's a precarious time.
Well, and I think, you know, John Chase, that's something that Dave touched on, is a weakened state of this mayor, and
right.
You know, this is not something that he's accustomed to being in a weakened state. You've got Governor Rauner basically saying he's a failure at everything. He's a failure at public safety, obviously trying to take political
sure.
advantage of somebody who's down. But at the same time, how does that affect the governance and management here?
Right. Well, I mean, that's exactly correct. This is, you know, without a doubt, the weakest that we've ever seen Mayor Emanuel, especially since he's become mayor. And he becomes so, we all know the mayor to be somebody who cares a great deal about the perception and working spin. And this becomes a cyclical thing, speaking of cyclical, where all the mayor can do is just deal with the fire of the day, one thing after another. And it takes a great deal of it's going to take a great deal of fortitude on his part in order to sort of set himself aside in order to start governing on a broader picture. Because right now, we've got a mayor who is all he's doing is just putting out, you know, one fire a day and dealing with one scandal after another, and he's not able to make some of these bigger picture decisions that he needs to make now more than ever.
And the police department's not his only problem, obviously. Giant schools problem,
right.
Giant budget problems, this debt problem. It's the police department is a huge task that could be a full-time job for any mayor, but it's one in a list of problems that Rahm has.
And this was something he was dealing, obviously, with crime. I mean, that was a major issue. But he was very, before all this Laquan McDonald situation happened, he was gearing off toward other issues, like what Dave was talking about. He's trying to deal with pensions and, you know, some of these bigger picture issues. And now it's all been put back into this, you know, this giant bucket that he's got to deal with now. And it's what, like I said, one scandal after another.
And
day
his
after
ability
day.
To deal with those other things also, I think, is hobbled by his problems on
right.
the crime front.
Well, and I have to wonder, too, is that before the Laquan McDonald video and all of that, I mean, Gary McCarthy still had a good deal of public support where now that's, you know, he's gone. And after, as I said, after the mayor had expressed support for him and then he's gone, he's a distraction, he's gone. And you're finding Emmanuel basically playing defense, which is not a position of strength.
No.
McCarthy did have some, I think, public capital on crime, but he took all the guff about crime, too, or he took most of it. And so he is gone. And so
he was the front man for a lot of issues.
Right. And at the moment, it's all on Rahm.
Right. It's all facing on him. And he's, you know, it's up to him to, you know, now he is in a, like I said earlier, he is in the weakest position we've ever seen him. And it's obvious, you know, he's not out as much as he used to be. When he goes out, you know, publicly, he does things. He doesn't always alert the media to it, especially when he goes to African-American neighborhoods. He's doing a lot of things sort of off his public schedule to do things like that, to try to work the back scenes as much as he can. But, you know, he's in a clearly defensive posture, which is not how we're used to seeing him and not how he's used to being.
And I want to talk more about that with Tribune reporters John Chase and David Heinzman. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Jump there. That's the Eagles Live 1974.
Is that from your 8-track collection?
Yeah. Already, from my quadraphonic 8-track collection.
People should know there was no Rick Pearson singing, but there was a little air guitar.
I will acknowledge there was a little bit of air guitar going on, but a little bit. Well, joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio, my good friends, former good friends, John Chase and David Heinzman. And we're talking seriously about the issues of what's going on with the Chicago Police Department, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. And I actually had a caller had a question about, has the TV show Chicago PD influenced what's going on now? And I think it's actually
the other way around.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard from, is that they're going to be more reflective of some of the issues on the show.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the show.
Dick Wolf, right? Yeah, he gave some interview when he was promoting yet another Chicago show, I think Chicago Med. He said, yeah, we're going to start getting into that issue about police corruption or police shootings or something along those lines.
I don't know.
You have to get the entertainment reporter in here for
right.
that.
I mean, that's really kind of a soap opera, and it has – Chicago is – it hasn't been
– It's not Chicago-specific.
Right. It hasn't been really, you know, driving a conversation about Chicago and anything it does, any of those shows. It's how many shows? It's three, right?
Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, and Chicago PD.
Right.
And
– No, I think it's the other way around. I mean, those guys, you know – I mean, as much as they try to influence anything, it's not the TV show influencing.
I think anybody who's going to have their perception of Chicago changed by Chicago PD probably already has a perception of, I don't know.
Well, but going back to before the break, and we were talking about Mayor Emanuel, and, you know, here is this guy who got elected because he's going to confront the big problems. He's in the reelect against Jesus Chuy Garcia. That was the issue of him portraying himself as, I'm the only adult in the room here,
right.
I'm going to deal this. And yet, here's this guy with all of this vast experience from a senior advisor in the Clinton White House, chief of staff Barack Obama, congressman, head of the DCCC, and who is renowned as being a message guy, spin guy, and he is spinning, but it's not, he's spinning like a top.
it's not funny, but.
But, I mean, seriously, this is not what anybody, certainly not what any of us expected.
No, I mean, you know, and it's not what we saw in the first 4 years either. You know, what we saw in the first 4 years was Rahm Emanuel. He was spinning, but he was trying to take control of every single news cycle. You know, it has become a cliche in the media world where it's, you know, Rahm Emanuel's, you know, day to, here's what his message is of the day. And, you know, and he was doing his best to try to win every single news cycle. And now he is on his heels. He is not able to control the message. The message is controlling him and his administration. And you've got his spokespeople doing whatever they can to try to turn the message, you know, a quarter turn as opposed to the whole way. And, you know, and it's also, you know, he's the other thing that Rahm's known for is fundraising. And I've written a decent amount about that. And, you know, that. He hasn't been very active on that front either. He's gotten a little bit, you know, keeping that going, but you know it reflects support as well.
Well, and we had the National Conference of Mayors out in Washington mm-hmm. last week where he attended, mm-hmm. and my friend Dana Milbank from the Washington Post noted, as did we, that you know everybody thought here was his chance to speak to that. Very, you know, he's still very Washington-centric and concerned about image. Chance to talk, and it was supposed to be about community police relations, and it was like Laquan McDonald and all of this. The Justice Department investigation is the elephant in the room, and he never addressed the elephant.
Yep.
And I think partly there's no at the spot that he's in right now. I think he thinks there's no constructive way to talk about it. You know, to help.
It's not a win.
Yeah, at all, because the facts are. Really bad, and you know, after everybody's read John's story, or John's story has influenced the way people understand this at the moment of when did he know it and what did he know and when did he know it, and there's no good answer for him, I guess, coming out of that, and so it's very hard for him to address it, I guess.
Do we see the city council more empowered because of this in any way, and also the city council as far as it relates to policing?
I'm as it relates to the city council, I sort of, they have to prove it first. There's been so many different scandals over, you know, the course of our lifetimes where you felt like, okay, now's the time for the city council to be empowered, and it's never happened. We still have we've always had a strong mayor. So I think there's opportunities there. I'm just not sure the city council is in a position to actually take advantage. I mean, there's a progressive caucus, and there are more divergent voices on the council than there have been in years past. And I think that those folks will continue to try to, you know, to build their support. But in terms of the whole council, you know, moving, you know, against the mayor or doing what they want to do versus what the mayor wants to do, I still feel like it's, you know, it's still one mayor, two city council.
I don't think we've seen any reason to believe that there's going to be a strong leadership voice for the city emerging from the council floor.
As has always
been the case.
Yes, indeed.
It's the Gray Wolves.
My good friends, John Chase, Dave Heinzman from the Chicago Tribune, thank you very much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Thanks for having
us. You're very welcome.
We'll be back with more right after this.